The Wealth Professional Podcast.
Hi, and welcome to the Wealth Professional Podcast. I'm Joe Rosengarten, and for the third and final time, I'm joined by advisor, investor, and CEO of Mandeville, Michael Lee Chin. In part three, Michael and I discuss the misperceptions of private investments, starting out as a mutual fund salesman, and becoming the only advisor in the world to reach the Forbes billionaire list.
So, Michael, you're the chairman and controlling shareholder of the ultimate parent companies of Mandeville Private Client Inc. and NCB Financial Group Limited, which is now the largest bank in Jamaica. Tell me, how did that all happen?
Well, as an investor, I'm driven by different frameworks, one of which would be the following. Outsized wealth is created when three conditions are met. The first is there must be a difference between perception and reality, because only when there's a difference between perception and reality will you have the knowledge arbitrage. And you can't create wealth unless there's knowledge arbitrage. Secondly, there must be inefficiencies. And thirdly, you can only create wealth, outsized wealth, when there is a lack of equity capital in the region, in the sector, or going towards the business. When those three preconditions, and all three, are met, bingo. So when the National Commercial Bank was for sale in early 2000, no one wanted it. But driven by those three preconditions I just met, the National Commercial Jamaica met those three tick boxes. The National Commercial Bank met those three tick boxes, and hence I made the investment. That investment has worked out wonderfully well. Most people don't realize that had they invested $100,000 at the same time in 2002 when I bought the National Commercial Bank, you could have invested then in the S&P 500. 100,000 would be worth probably 400,000. Berkshire Hathaway, from then until now, would be worth about 422,000. The Morgan Stanley Emerging Markets Index would be worth 429,000 US. The National Commercial Bank is worth 3 million US. So when those three preconditions are met, it's magical over time.
So, Michael, I wanted to talk a little bit about your success and your legacy now and how you've got to where you are. So looking back to when you were a young person, were the worlds of
I still am a young person.
An even younger person. Were the worlds of finance and investment something that came up regularly at home? Was it something that you were aware of?
No, my family, they were, when I was growing up, in my early formative years, my parents were both clerks in a supermarket. My parents eventually got into business, but then I went off to university. So I did a civil engineering. Then I was on a scholarship. I went back to Jamaica, spent 2 years, came back to Canada, couldn't get a job as an engineer. And the only job I could have gotten was to sell mutual funds for Investors Group. And so that was my first introduction to selling and also to the financial world. And to me, it became a passion because I've always aspired to be wealthy. I wanted to be wealthy. I didn't want to work the rest of my life and end up with nothing. I want to have money working for me. Not that I could retire, but I just want to have that security. So creating wealth has always been a curiosity of mine. And hence, when I first got into the business, I had to, it focused me on how is wealth created? Is there a formula that if you practice consistently, the only outcome is wealth? That was my focus as a young man in entering the business. And it came to me a year later in 1978. Yes, there's a formula. And I went through it with you earlier, the five laws of wealth creation. And all I've done since is led by example by practicing those five laws. It's not arcane. It's a matter of doing something consistently over the long run, doing the same thing consistently over the long run, and compounding will take care of you. The magic of compounding.
So you mentioned entering the industry as a mutual fund salesman and your first steps into the financial industry. It sounds like from listening to you speak, that was quite an exciting time for you.
It was, at the time, it didn't feel that way, because it was tough. Cold calling is not easy. Getting rejections isn't what one wake up to wish for. But having no choice, both engines were forward, right? So I had no, the bridges were burnt behind me. I couldn't go backwards, I had to go forward. So whatever challenges I came across, I just had to go under, over, through. But it came down to one thing: being passionate about something. I had an observation early, which made me come to the conclusion that every single successful person is a disciple of something. So I had to ask myself, Mike, what are you going to be a disciple of? If you want to be very successful, you have to be a disciple of something. What is that something? And the five laws became my something.
So, you started out as a mutual fund salesman, but how did your role as an advisor develop to the point where you were seen as the only advisor in the world to be on that Forbes billionaire list? How did that happen?
Well, it was in a period of crisis. I remember I was an ardent seller of McKinsey Financial's products. And during one of the recessions, in fact, it was 1982, when interest rates in Canada went up to 23.7% prime rate. So we were borrowing at 25% in 1982-83. So mutual funds had a one-year track record of minus 60%. Canada saving bonds were paying 19%. So no one wanted to buy mutual funds. Everybody wanted to buy Canada saving bonds. So I was, my business came to a trickle. Yet still, when I went to McKinsey Financial Corporation office, they were expanding. They were expanding. So I thought, wow, I'm on the wrong side of the table. Because I'm the one every day who is fighting to keep the clients from redeeming, yet still they are thriving and I'm starving. I'm on the wrong side of the table. I need to go convert AUA to AUM. So that was a driving force. So I had to figure out a way to go from AUA to AUM. And at the time we didn't have trail commissions. And by the way, today, if we feel that trail commissions will be here forever, we are mistaken. That will not happen. So we have better start preparing as advisors now for the day when AUA do not have trail commissions. So you have to go to AUM. So nothing has changed. My early days, we didn't have trail commissions. We'll get back to that. There'll be no trail commissions in the future. And there are some countries who have already gone to that situation. So it forced me to figure out, how do I go from AUA to AUM? That's when I bought the small management company in 1987, Advantage Investment Counsel. It had one portfolio, the Advantage Fund with $800,000 in assets under management, and the rest is I transformed the mandate from being your typical mutual fund to being a mutual fund with only 15 securities. A mutual fund that abided by the five laws of wealth creation. The rest is history. So today at Mandeville, we have a program. Because of my experience, I wouldn't be here if I didn't figure out a way to go from AUA to AUM. We have a program today whereby an advisor at Mandeville can build their own fund and start developing an AUM track record, no different from I did with the Advantage Fund. And if your track record is good, then you can sell it to the rest of the world.
So what advice would you give to an advisor today who has maybe been in the industry for a while, but they want to grow their practice and push on to the next level?
It's simple. You have to differentiate yourself. You have to build a reputation for something. And you have to be client-centric. Focus on the client's needs. Clients are begging, please create wealth for me. If your behavior, your portfolios do not reflect how wealth is created in the real world, you're being totally irrelevant.
And there's also been a lot of talk about the difficulties faced for those starting out in the industry. Would your advice differ for people entering the industry on day one or day two?
No, from day one, you have to stand for something. And it's standing for something that you're passionate about. And that's another lesson I learned early, that successful people, really successful people, are passionate about a cause. And so it's no different from for advisors. If you're passionate about a cause, a framework in this case, then people will buy your passion. That's what people buy, your passion. Your believability. Most people don't have a passion because they don't have a cause. They don't have principles. They don't have a religion. So it's your value system, it's your principles, your religion that will be the differentiator, that will cause you, will be the best practice management builder. Your principles, your cause, your passion. So from the get-go, starting off in business, you have to ask yourself the question, what is my cause? What am I willing to defend to the end of the line? What is that? Do I have a cause? If I don't have a cause, I am just going to be wandering in the desert. If I have a cause, then I can be passionate, and that is what people buy, and that is what will guide me when the downturn occurs. And the downturns will always occur. And when the ear pockets hit, you need to have that value system that will keep you going.
You mentioned the word framework amongst some of those tips there, and I know that you yourself developed a framework for investing early in your career. First, tell me why you felt it important to develop a really robust and solid framework that you could follow.
I developed because, as I said earlier, I observed that very successful people, they're driven by a purpose in their life. I wanted to be purpose-driven. I wanted to, because when you have a purpose, you become passionate. I just didn't want to go through life on a boring, monotonous way. I wanted to live a life of passion. It so happened that I am in a business that I could find a cause within the context of my business, financial advice giving. I'm passionate about that. And at the same time, be honest enough to live it, execute it, eat my own cooking, and create a lot of wealth. So it is the only business I know that that would give a young immigrant that opportunity, or anyone that opportunity. The only business to create outsized wealth, having passion, living by a cause, and having the fulfillment of knowing that you're changing people's lives.
So final question now, talking about those laws for wealth creation. We found out why you felt so important to develop it, but then talk to me about the process of how you did that. How did you go about actually developing that framework and those laws of creation, wealth creation?
Well, I have a process, and my process goes like this. And I guess it's the engineering training in me. I observe. So secondly, I create a hypothesis from my observation. Thirdly, I test the hypothesis. I stress test it. And if the hypothesis holds true, I codify it. And then lastly, I hardwire it so it becomes who I am. So the question I had initially was, is there a formula that if you practice consistently, the only outcome is wealth? That was the question. So I observed. So I observed wealthy people. And then I created a hypothesis, the five laws. I tested it. And then I codified it. It's now the five laws. And then I hardwired it so it became who I am. So when I look at any investment, I go through that process. So I therefore have a consistent mechanism. It's not perfect because your emotions sometimes corrode your framework, but at least it gives me a discipline that will make me less imperfect. It will make me less imperfect.
Well, Michael Lichin, it's been a real pleasure to chat with you today. I just want to say thanks for spending some time with Wealth Professional.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me.
So before we let you go, we must share the following disclaimer, because as with any international investing, there are additional risks with investing in Jamaica Stock Exchange listed securities. Past performance is not indicative of future performance, and this podcast is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell any security.